studios of KPCW in Park City, it's This Green Earth, a weekly talk show about the environment and our connections with it. I'm Nell Larson.
And I'm Chris Cherniak. Engineers Without Borders is a national nonprofit organization whose mission is to send professional engineers and engineers in training to developing nations and assist them in building needed infrastructure, such as roads, bridges, drinking water, and wastewater treatment systems.
Jessica Kars is a fourth-year chemical engineering major at Montana State University. She recently spent a month in western Kenya working with Engineers Without Borders on a project designed to bring safer and more efficient forms of drinking water to a local village. She joins us in the first part of the show to share the successes, challenges, and very hard work required to dig a well in western Kenya.
That's right. Then in the second half of the show, we'll talk about the community garden set up at the Park City Medical Center. Amy Roberts from PCMC will join us along with a representative from Falling Waters, the landscaping firm who designed and constructed the garden. The garden and its produce is free and available to anyone. Amy will share all the details.
So we'll have all that and then some news highlights. One of the things we'll talk about is a 20,000-acre land swap here in the state of Utah that was recently signed by President Obama. And then we'll also talk about Mexico and California teaming up to fight climate change.
Really? And maybe if we have some time, so a story about sludge in Virginia.
That's right.
And regulatory compliance. It's so fascinating.
Who doesn't love regulatory compliance,
I love that
Chris?
Stuff. Our connections with it, impacts upon the environment. That's what This Green Earth is all about. And it all gets started right after these words from our underwriters. Stay tuned.
Hi, I'm Maren Mullen, and I'm a Recycle Utah board member. Did you know that water conservation is what we're really all about? And you thought it was only recycling. We save your H2O. How? By encouraging you to recycle more, by teaching our students how to conserve water, and by making it possible for you to drop off hazardous waste at our collection events. Yep, we're all about saving your water, because we can't live without it. Recycle Utah is a nonprofit organization bringing conservation ideas to you since 1990. Check us out at recycleutah.org.
This is Steve Roney with Berkshire Hathaway Home Services Utah Properties, formerly Prudential Utah. We continue to be proud supporters of KPCW and are excited to embark on the next era of Park City real estate under our new brand. More info at bhhsutah.com.
Rocky Mountain Power is proud to support KPCW and This Green Earth. Rocky Mountain Power WattSmart New Homes Program offers incentives for building a new energy-efficient home that can help you enjoy year-round comfort, higher resale value, and lower energy bills. To learn more or find a builder in your area, WattSmart.com.
Welcome to This Green Earth, a weekly talk show about environmental issues and concepts of sustainability. I'm Chris Cherniak, co-host Nell Larson, of course, across the board, and joining us in the studio is Jessica Kars. She's a Park City resident, Park City High School grad, and now a fourth-year chemical engineering major at Montana State University. Jessica is here to talk about a recent trip/program she got, and project she got involved in, which involved traveling to western Kenya with Engineers Without Borders, and assisting a village there trying to provide that village with a better source of drinking water. So Jessica's here to talk all about that experience. Thanks for coming on the show this morning.
Thanks for having me.
Good and close to that microphone.
Thanks for having me.
So, like I say, you got involved with Engineers Without Borders, a nonprofit organization that does work around the world. Both professional engineers, engineers in training like yourself. But Montana State University has a separate Engineers Without Borders group, correct?
It's actually within the Engineers Without Borders USA. It's just a branch chapter. So the USA branches off to a bunch of universities, and each university runs their own chapter and partners with a certain district and particular countries that are assigned to them.
Yeah, because I noticed that the University of Utah and Utah State has Engineers Without Borders too. So they go to different parts of the world, Mexico, South America, Ecuador, et cetera.
Asia.
So you, Montana State, has been doing work with this, I guess, one village or several villages in Western Kenya, correct?
It's a district within Western Kenya, and we've had a partnership with this particular district for about 10 years now.
Wow, okay. So you went there in June, and you were there for a month?
Yes.
Okay. What was the goal, the objective?
Our team's goal was to put a well in the primary school that we were assigned last year so they could get clean water and then the students wouldn't have to go to springs during their class time to get the water for the school.
Right. So the current situation is that the students every day, you say every morning or so, have to go walk some distance.
Yeah, the students have to walk about 2 kilometers, maybe a mile every day to the springs. And even those springs aren't clean water. They're just a water source for them.
It's untreated water from a spring. They fill up what?
They fill up these buckets, cans that are maybe were used to carry food earlier on. They just fill up about 20 Nalgene bottles and carry these containers on their heads, bring them back to the school, and maybe sometimes they don't come back to school right away. It's an interesting battle.
That's part of so it's like a field trip.
Yeah.
But in this case, it's
unsupervised field trip
to get water, and so it takes some time away from the day, from their studies, simply just to go get water, for their drinking needs, their hygiene needs,
washing, cooking, cook food.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what kinds of other projects, you said this is a 10-year partnership, what kinds of other projects has the Montana State chapter been doing in this village?
So this isn't, we get assigned a particular village every year.
Okay.
But throughout the years, we have put in wells, we've done compost latrines, we've done rainwater catchment systems. We've also put in a pipeline that 3 different schools benefited from to get water to those schools. Our goal is to put in a water or sanitation project in every primary school in the district by the time we're finished working with the district.
So the focus is definitely on clean water then?
And sanitation. We do a lot of compost latrines as well.
Ah, okay. So Fantastic. We'll get to that because that has a little interesting side story to that. Let's go back. How many were in your group?
There were 4 students involved from Engineers Without Borders, MSU, and then we brought in 1 professional mentor engineer in the community that volunteered to come with us and kind of advise us and work with us.
Okay, but that's it, just your little group. And so the goal was to dig a well.
Yes.
What was the original thought that as far as how deep you'd have to go?
So originally we thought that we would hit water around 250 feet, but it was stated that we might have to dig about 600 feet to get water, and we dug the full 600 feet, and we did not find enough water to give to the school.
Really? So there might have been some water there, but you say it didn't charge the well enough that you could draw from it without running it dry. It just wasn't a producing well.
It just wasn't a viable area to get water. It might have been because of the location, the school being up on a hill, or just the rock geology. We did not find viable source of water to get to the school.
Okay.
So what kind of research and prep did you do before this trip so that once you got there, you were ready to go and you knew how to drill a well or where to drill a well?
We work all year round. We figure out, we have a list of schools, and then we pick which school we're going to work at that summer. And then we send a geologist over there, or that already works over there and that works for the contractors. They go to the school and they tell us where to drill. But sometimes we lose paperwork between us and Kenya because it's a long distance. And some things get really lost in that country.
Sure.
So we work all year round. We do research. We do trainings for ourselves, for the wells. We do lots of work. Like, we do retreats over weekends. So we have whole weekends just training us to get ready for this trip.
Okay. Give us a little sense of the what this village was like. How many, what was the population? What was the setting, the infrastructure there?
So the village was pretty spaced out, very green, lush, kind of foresty type area. Not what I was expecting. There, at the primary school we worked at, there were 620 students, and this is from about kindergarten to eighth grade. And so, but these kids can walk for like an hour to get to the school in the morning, and so they stay all day, and then they don't leave until 7 at night.
Right.
But the buildings are kind of plaster or any metal that they can find, or their roofs, they're kind of run down, and they just use anything they can bring to themselves.
Right. Electricity?
If you're fortunate, yes, there is electricity.
Some of the elders or so had...
Maybe not so many elders, just because they were set in their ways.
Oh.
But the family we lived with, they had electricity in our house and their son's house. And some houses do have electricity. The schools don't have any electricity.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what's the source for that electricity?
I'm guessing it's a generator. It's a community...
Localized sources. Not sort of big.
No, okay, and it fails a lot.
So inconsistent.
Yeah, we'd go like 3 days after a storm without power.
Okay. And the interesting thing, you said it was lush, not kind of the more savanna or more arid. So it actually does get a good deal of surface water, rainwater, you said.
Yeah, lots of rainwater.
So that's probably why that spring is fairly effective. But it, like you say, it's untreated water. And so the goal was to source groundwater, which would be have a little more, a better quality of water for them. Okay. So right now they collect water using catchment systems or rain barrels or?
Rainwater catchment system is something we've put in a different primary school. But right now they collect rain off of their roofs and gutter systems in these massive barrels.
Okay.
They'll do that when it's raining, but their main source is the springs.
Is the main economy farming?
Yes, very much so. But it's also, the farming is generated for the family's needs mostly. They don't really
produce
enough.
Right.
They do, a lot of families do grow tea leaves and they sell those. But corn, kale... And a bunch of other vegetables, those are mainly grown for that family.
Kale. It's trendy even in Kenya.
They call it skumawiki, but yeah.
Ah,
skumawiki?
I like that better.
You know what? I prefer that. Skumawiki. Okay. Hey, if you just joined us, we're speaking with Jessica Carrs. She is a Park City resident, a graduate of Park City High School here, and now is in her fourth year at Montana State University, where she's majoring in chemical engineering, and when she's talking about the month or so she spent back in June in Kenya, Western Kenya specifically, working with Engineers Without Borders on a project, in this case, to try to access groundwater as a source of drinking water, potable water for a small village and a school district in Western Kenya. What was the name of the village?
The village was named Munjidi.
Munjidi? Okay. And what's interesting, when Jessica and I was talking before the show, of course, Google Maps, you could zoom in right in on the village. You can go visit this, see this, and you probably did that in preparation to see what this place looked like.
We did, and we also do it to get schematics for designs of projects as well.
Okay. How was this funded?
We raise all the money that we use to put in these projects every summer. So we depend largely on our community up in Bozeman to give us quite a bit of money.
Right. How much does it cost to dig a 600-foot well?
One borehole costs $30,000.
Wow.
All
right.
And that's with a lot of free labor and free expertise from you guys.
From us, yeah. We do that, but we have to hire contractors that come from one of the bigger cities, Kakamega, near where we work. But and the community has to host us. They give us food. They put a house over our heads while we're there. And so that's kind of all free in a sense. We give them a borehole that's very expensive, and then they host us.
Yeah. But you talk about some of the other projects, the compostable latrine project, and some of the challenges associated with that.
So another one of the projects we do is a compost latrine, because a lot of schools are running out of room with their pit latrines, which are like porta potties kind of, but they don't get emptied ever.
Right.
And so we put in these compost latrines, and they've got three stages, and they get a reuse once all the stages have gone through. They get to reuse this compost to grow their corn, their kale.
Right.
And they use everything. But a problem we have is with some of the schools or the health and sanitation teachers, they're fundamentalists, and they kind of think it's unclean to touch this compost, or they don't want to use it. So trying to get them to understand that this is actually a really good thing. It works. It's good for the ground.
Right.
It's safe.
Save space. We did research projects to prove to them that the science is behind us.
Right.
And we gave them those results. And I think that helps as well.
But there's a behavioral hurdle there.
Right.
Sure. And I imagine that's something we'd probably encounter here. And maybe it wouldn't so much be like a fundamental thing, but a cultural thing.
Yeah.
You know, you kind of think, kind of gross. Are you sure that works?
Right.
Are you sure that's clean and good to grow corn in?
Right.
Yeah. And so that's one of the challenges, but that's one of your projects you're working on. So let's talk a little bit about any other, like, that's one challenge. Any other cultural taboos or things that you had as far as students or as far as women being there?
For students, and especially for the female students that came, it was better for us, since we're younger than most of the people we talk to, it was better for us to have a title.
Yes.
So I was a water quality researcher, and I had to announce my title every time I was introduced to these people that are probably 40 or 50, and they're like, you're a kid.
Right.
Yeah. You can't tell me what this is. So having a title definitely helps with that. With the men in our group, they typically got the respect right away.
Right.
But we still gave them titles.
Right.
But it definitely helped for being a female.
Yeah. Rather than just saying I'm a student.
Right.
In chemical engineering. That's
like,
not good enough.
You're
still a student.
Have no standing here.
Did you do any teaching while you're there?
Did. The kids would just pull us into these classrooms and like, teach us something, or they want to just ask us questions. And it was kind of crazy. One of the first questions a girl asked us was, what are the guerrilla wars like in the U.S.?
Oh, wow.
That's incredible.
So she didn't really understand like what goes on in the U.S. And I was like, we don't have those.
I'll have to get back to you on that. This is, but that's really interesting, their perception. And, of course, you had a fair amount of suitors. Some guys interested in you. Tell us about that.
I did get 5 marriage proposals.
Okay.
My best offer was...
Title or no title, got 5 marriage proposals.
Well,
I got 21 cows offered to me, which is a big deal.
That's a big number?
Big 21 accomplishment.
Cows.
Yeah. They really didn't want me to leave the village.
They did not. Or they'd be happy to have you return.
Yes.
And again, you could. I mean, talk about your overall experience. Worthwhile?
Very worthwhile. It's very rewarding, even though our well did not work.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to go back next year to put in a water project, because we told them we're working with them, even though this didn't work. We're coming back and we're going to give you a water project. And so I would love to go back. It is a great experience. The people are so generous and so nice.
Mm-hmm.
And not every time they would talk to us, they're like, we don't want to hurt our visitors. We take pride in our visitors, especially since we were the first white people in that village.
Right. Okay. And so they are so appreciative that you're there providing that efforts. And so another group will go. Perhaps you will join them next summer.
Yes.
Or so, and continue that effort. And again, Engineers Without Borders does this in countries around the world. I noticed on their website, again, they have projects going on in Mexico, in Central America, throughout Central America, South America, like you say, other parts of Africa. I mean, I have to ask, with some of the issues going on there right now in Western Africa with respect to Ebola, anyone fall ill to any issues?
Some minor illnesses. One kid did get typhoid.
Okay.
From, I don't know where. But on my team, because there's four teams that go, my team, no one got sick.
Okay.
Which is a huge accomplishment.
And so food, I mean, what was a typical, you said there was a lot of tea breaks.
A lot of tea.
Talk about that.
They four love tea their breaks tea a day? Time. Yeah. So we have tea in the morning with breakfast, and then we have an 11 o'clock tea, and then we have lunch at 2, and then we have a 4:30 tea, and then we have dinner at 7. So we're constantly being fed food. They're just so much food, too.
Like, really?
Way
no
too much.
Really? That's great. But these are formal breaks.
Yes. Okay. Everything stops. All work stops.
Sounds like a great schedule.
You want to set that up at Swanner?
Yeah, new schedule for the staff.
For tea break.
Five breaks a day.
Yeah, exactly. More than the four that they take now. I said it, you did it. Jessica, that's great. If people want to learn more about Engineers Without Borders, you have the website?
You can Google Engineers Without Borders USA, or if you wanted to look into Montana State, we also have our own little webpage, EWBMSU.com.
Okay.
We've got a list of what we've done, what schools we worked at, what our mission is, and just a bunch of information there.
Fantastic. And how do you say kale again?
Skumawiki.
Skumawiki.
word of the day.
Sounds like a greeting, too, and a departure. Skumawiki. All right. Jessica Carrs, thank you so much for taking the time to join us and
Thanks
tell us all about
me.
Your experience.
And good luck with the rest of the project next year.
Yeah.
Thank you.
All right. Hey, let's take a break for some underwriters. When we come back, Amy Roberts and Falling Waters will be here to talk about the community garden at the Park City Medical Center. It's This Green Earth. Stay tuned.
In a city where good information is as valuable as finding hooch on Pioneer Day, Joseph Pop Jenks gets a visit.
What's the matter, Mac?
My Dolores has gone missing. All I found was this note.
Public service announcement. Your skirt ain't coming back from the curling club tonight. Signed, Big Donor.
Will Pop help Lefty find Dolores? Find out during the KPCW Summer Pledge Drive August 18th through 22nd. Who done it? Who donated? Could it be you?
Hi, I'm Maren Mullen, and I'm a Recycle Utah board member. Did you know that water conservation is what we're really all about? And you thought it was only recycling. We save your H2O. How? By encouraging you to recycle more, by teaching our students how to conserve water, and by making it possible for you to drop off hazardous waste at our collection events. Yep, we're all about saving your water, because we can't live without it. Recycle Utah is a nonprofit organization bringing conservation ideas to you since 1990. Check us out at recycleutah.org.
Welcome back to This Green Earth, a weekly talk show on environmental issues and concepts of sustainability. She's Nell Larson. I'm Chris Cherniak. Joining us in the studio is Amy Roberts, Public Relations Director with Park City Medical Center.
Good morning.
Hi, Amy. And John Nuffer. He is with Falling Waters.
We're a landscape contractor here in Park City.
Thanks, John, for joining us. And the two of you are here to talk about the community gardens recently constructed and set up and now running, if that's what you want to call
it.
Growing, maybe.
It's now growing.
And producing.
At the Park City Medical Center. So, Amy, yeah, give us a quick overview on where the gardens are located, how big they are, number of plots, et cetera.
Sure. So the garden is on the south side of the hospital. If you're facing the hospital, it's on the far left, and it kind of connects to the trail system right there, which was part of our strategic plan. We wanted people to think about getting out, getting some exercise, and then, you know, grabbing some healthy organic fruits and vegetables to take home, make a salad with, or have a snack, whatever. And it's open. It's free to anyone. We just ask that you close the gate and keep that locked so the deer don't go in and have their own little salad after you leave. But it's a great little program. It's about 2,000 square feet, just shy of that. And we have 38 beds, if you will. They're 4x4 plots, but we've put them together so they're 4x8. So lots of different vegetables growing out there. We've got corn, tomatoes, peppers, all sorts of leafy greens, squash, zucchini. We have some berries. We did plant in the middle of June, and 2 days later had a blizzard. So we covered and crossed our fingers, and most things survived. You know, a couple things were like, wait, what just happened? But they've all done okay. And man, we've got zucchinis coming out our ears.
Really?
So yeah. And corn, you know, pun intended, I guess. Lots of ears of corn.
Okay.
So what was the motivation behind this project? How long has this been in the works for?
So back in January, I kind of, I was watching actually like a National Geographic special, and I saw this community garden that was done in the Seattle area. And it was really, massive. It was like 7 acres, and the city donated the land, and it was this edible food forest. And so I got a little intimidated, but I kept thinking, gosh, I know we can do that here. I know that we can do something like that here. And it was really an answer to their low income and homeless population to be able to have access to fruits and vegetables. And I thought, you know, we have a low income population here that I would love to be able to have access to this. And then, it, you know, generally anyone in the community as well. But so I kind of started playing with the idea, and I called Falling Waters, John over here, and I said, can we make this work? And he said, absolutely, we can make this work. So I pitched it to the hospital team, and we thought it tied in very well with our Live Well mission, which is all about prevention and eating right and, you know, nutrition and exercise. So it just sort of took root.
So, John, tell us about your and Falling Waters role in the project.
Well, along with the Amy had an excellent basic design. There are some issues that we had out there, particularly deer, rabbits, grade issues, and then water impact fees for the city to try to make it affordable. And the city worked with us very well, finding a site on the property so that we didn't face additional water impact fees. And then we worked with the staff at the hospital to get irrigation set up, built a wonderful deer fence around the site, graded everything so that it's suitable for handicap access in the future. We're going to be putting pavers in the center of it so that you can have wheelchair access and everything in the future. So it's really going to be a fabulous project as it comes to maturity.
And we did do some, all of the beds are raised off the ground, but we did do a bed that is considerably higher, a couple feet high, specifically for handicap accessibility.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Who manages the plots day to day, or?
Well, we have a great group of volunteers. It hasn't been too hard to manage after it got planted. We have a great group of volunteers who go out and weed it for us, and that's really been the only need. We've got some signage out there that asks people, you know, if you take a vegetable, please pull a weed if you see it as well.
Right.
We have a composter out there. John's crew put in a drip system, so we're really only watering the plants, which doesn't usually make a lot of weeds, except for we've luckily had a lot of rain, and the garden has loved it. But if you want to volunteer in the garden, you just let me know.
I was out there yesterday.
Did you pick
around.
Anything?
No.
Oh, no, not even a weed?
I did touch every vegetable. So
just to make sure they weren't plastic or what?
For quality control?
I did take a bite out of one squash. I put it back. So
So the one with the bite out, it's not a bunny, it was
that's
you.
That's mine, okay. If you see it.
Be back for that later.
No, I mean, it was weed free. I was like, I like weed. It's kind of strange, but weeding can be very therapeutic. You know, you just sit there and weed. There wasn't a single weed out there for me to pull.
Good to know.
So whoever's doing it was a great job. But so it's got drip irrigation and protection from deer and rabbits and other critters, and that's working out.
Absolutely, and the drip is run individually to each individual raised bed, so it's easy to manipulate around any plantings. And so next year when it gets to be replanted, you just pull up the tubes a little bit, loosen up the soil, lay them back down, and it'll be very, very easy.
And you have a compost bin, a little compost
bin.
We've
got a little composter out there, yeah. And it's, you know, we wanted to make it as eco-friendly as possible. We did organic soil, and, you know, we're not using any chemicals or fertilizers or anything on the fruits and vegetables. We didn't even stain the boxes so that they could be considered organic. So it's exciting. And, you know, one thing, as much as I say it, people still can't seem to believe it. It's free.
Right.
Anyone That's can go point. Out and, you know, pick some vegetables, pick some fruit, take them home. We ask that you just only take what you intend to eat. Right. If we see you at the farmer's market, it's bad karma. But, you know, no, so far everyone has been very, very respectful of that. And it's been really nice to see. I've had a couple notes from people who, you know, say, hey, I just came and picked some tomatoes and a zucchini and I got a great summer salad. Thanks so much.
Yeah.
And, so it's been great.
That's fantastic.
Do you feel like it's starting to catch on? Are people coming in and picking and using the garden?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, it's just now really starting to produce. We planted in mid-June and it takes a little while for the plants to start growing fruits and vegetables. And so things are ready now. The lettuce came really quickly. Peppers came pretty quickly because we had a lot of a long heat, you know, area. Heat wave, I guess. Mm-hmm. And they loved that. The squash is all coming in now. So it's kind of come in at different stages, which has been nice. Corn is not quite ready, but you can see the ears coming up. So it's gonna be there soon.
Any plans to expand? You got that whole lawn towards the...
Well, John's nodding, thinking, hey.
You know, it's kind of like people that just got married and you say, when's the baby due? You know, it's like, whoa, give us a second. We're just enjoying this. But, you know, maybe in the future for sure. I've had a lot of people say, hey, can we make a greenhouse next year? And I think this year was a sort of a learning year. We kind of figured out what would grow in that area, what won't. So we'll take good notes and maybe next year we'll make it a little bit bigger. I don't know yet for sure.
But there's opportunity, but that's
there's
not
potential.
Out of the question, yeah. Because there's room and availability right around there to expand, right?
The pavers that we will be installing next year are available through various charities. You can get a hold of Amy and she can direct you. But for engraving your name in as a nonprofit donation to various charities as well.
Oh, good.
Yeah, we've partnered with 5 nonprofits, Mountain Trails, People's Health Clinic, the Park City Community Foundation, Youth Sports Alliance, and the Hope Alliance. And so you can choose one of those 5 charities and buy a paver, be part of the permanent legacy at Park City Medical Center's community garden. It'll John's crew will put it in the ground in the spring, and they're $150 each, and 100% of the proceeds go to whichever nonprofit you choose.
Fantastic.
Very cool.
And John, just briefly about your company. What do you guys specialize?
Well, we are a full-service landscape contractor here in Park City. I've been here 12 years, and our office is out at Kimball Junction, right by Taco Bell. And we specialize in pavers and water features, but we also have maintenance crews doing things like weeding. We have a mow and blow crew. We build rock retaining walls, but we install a lot of pavers and water features.
Okay. Good.
Hence the name, Falling Waters. It's all coming together.
And website?
We do. It's fallingwaterspc.com.
Fallingwaterspc.com.
And I will say they do excellent work. We've been very, very happy with the way the garden turned out.
Fantastic. Well, again, it's free. Go out and check it out. I think it's a great idea. Well done, Amy.
Thank you.
See, watching TV.
I know. Watching National Geographic pays off.
Watch National Geographic. That's the takeaway.
It all started
here.
With sitting on the couch and
eating a bowl of ice cream, not living well.
That's where some great ideas come from. So well done. And hopefully we'll stay in touch and see how things go at the end of the year.
Absolutely. I'll bring you some zucchini bread next time I come in. Zucchini straight from the garden.
Sounds good.
And we're always interested in skuma wiki.
I heard on the way here that's the Swahili word for kale.
Yes.
Right? Yes.
So there you go.
I lived in Kenya for a little while. So
what?
I didn't know that was the word for kale. But
you lived in Kenya?
Yes, but just have a tiny, tiny, you,
it's not like riding a bike. If you don't use it, you lose it. And I don't remember all of my Swahili.
but you just lived in Kenya.
Yeah, volunteered over there for a short time.
Really? Oh, fantastic.
That's a whole different...
That's another show.
that's another conversation.
Right. Okay. Well, Amy Roberts with Park City Medical Center and John Nuffer with Falling Waters, thank you so much for coming in and sharing this information about the community gardens at Park City Medical Center. We'll be in touch.
Thank you. Thank you. Love you guys' show.
All right. Good job. Let's take a break for some underwriters. And when we come back, got some news items. Stay tuned. It's This Green Earth.
This is Steve Roney with Berkshire Hathaway Home Services, Utah Properties, formerly Prudential, Utah. We continue to be proud supporters of KPCW and are excited to embark on the next era of Park City real estate under our new brand. More info at bhhsutah.com.
Rocky Mountain Power is proud to support KPCW and This Green Earth. Rocky Mountain Power offers watt-smart advice such as avoiding the use of large appliances like a washer or dryer between 2 and 8 p.m. because it helps reduce energy demand and keeps costs down for all of us. More ways to save energy at wattsmart.com.
This is Dana Edwards on behalf of Vail Resorts and Cannons Resort supporting KPCW. This year, we developed partnerships with 25 local nonprofits to support programs like the fourth grade program at Swanner Preserve and Eco Center. Every fourth grader in Summit County will experience Utah's ecosystem firsthand and see science come to life through infield classes. Thanks to Swanner for making science cool.
Welcome back to This Green Earth. I'm Nell Larson, and that's co-host Chris Cherniak across the board, waving to all of our listeners.
Hello.
And also, of course, in the studio with us is EJ Elliott, the summer research specialist.
Specialist now. Okay, I'm a specialist.
Yeah, exactly. You've been upgraded.
I've been upgraded.
And so we have some news highlights to cover from the past couple of weeks that we've been wanting to get to. So who wants to start?
Well, let's start with, you want to do the land swap?
Yeah.
Yeah,
so,
let's do that.
Okay, so what this is some big news here for Utah. And I'm glad you said you didn't hear about this, Chris, because I hadn't heard about this either, and I didn't even find, you know, too much information on it. So I think it just kind of went pretty smoothly and maybe a little bit under the radar, more than you would have expected. But it seems kind of like this great win-win success story. So it's always a fun one to cover. So essentially, on July 25th, the president signed a bill that sort of paved the way for a land swap to take place between some federal land and some sitla land here in Utah.
Mm-hmm.
And this Desolation Canyon area that was the focus of this, part of the Uinta Ouray Reservation here in Utah, and it was really culturally important. So there was a lot of, you know, Native American heritage in this area, lots of historic sites and all those kinds of things from hundreds and hundreds of years. And then, you know, the scientists took a look at it and said, actually, this is a really ecologically important area too. It's got a lot of biodiversity. This is a place that we should focus on saving. But Sitla's mission here in Utah is to bring in money, to raise money from the lands that they have for the public school system.
Okay.
And that whole system is probably a conversation for another time.
Right.
You know, is it a good idea for the public school system to be counting on energy development on our state lands?
Right, because they're leasing, they could be leasing land to
gas and oil.
Grass and oil drillers.
Funding source. So this land was Sitla land. And Rob Bishop actually wrote a bill, and, you know, this is a conservative Republican, and this got passed by the House in May and then the Senate in early July, and actually has the blessing of groups like the Wilderness Society saying, okay, this is a win-win. We're protecting a really ecologically important area.
Mm-hmm.
And we are also, you know, protecting the cultural heritage of this tribe. And Sitla actually is going to get lands that are much more rich in gas and oil and are less environmentally or ecologically sensitive. So Sitla, you know, their mission is to bring in this money for the public schools, so they can't just give up land, really, in the way that the legislation historically has been written here in Utah. And so they get, you know, they'll have increased funding for the Utah public school system because they'll be able to do more oil and gas development. And the tribe kind of has this area protected and, you know, not just for the tribe, but I would say probably for all of Utah.
Right.
So it's kind of a neat bill and a success story.
Yeah. Is a win-win. How many acres again?
20,000 acres.
20,000 acres. 300.
Yeah.
30 square miles. Yeah.
So yeah, this reservation is over 6 or 7 counties in, you know, northeastern Utah. It's a big area, and this is just one little piece of it.
Okay. So Sitla gives up this land to federal authorities. And in return, they receive land.
Federal
land that we would say is environmentally degraded.
For revenue.
For
yeah,
gas
and that's
oil
one thing.
Drill.
Right, exactly. You know it's going to be impacted heavily through all of this drilling.
Yes.
But I think the success is that better in this location than the initial location.
Right.
And on top of that, the Desolation Canyon area in 2012. The BLM approved a plan, it's BLM land, to drill as many as 1,300 natural gas wells in the next 15 years across more than 206,000 acres of mostly federal land.
Mm-hmm.
And so the Desolation Canyon Wilderness Study Area would have been pretty heavily impacted by
yes.
that. And so now that's off the table for this area as well. And,
okay.
So, you know, and then like when that was approved, the Wilderness Society and other environmental groups actually put a lawsuit in place and said, hey, you're going to impact a wilderness study area. So this has all kind of come together, but it's, you know, a bipartisan bill and is you know, Rob Bishop and Orrin Hatch met with the conservation groups in the area
right.
and kind of figured out what would work for everyone.
Okay. Great.
Yeah.
Where did you find this story? Where people want to learn more about it?
I came across this story through High Country News, which
okay.
is an awesome news outlet for all things, you know, about the environment and social issues
right.
here in the West.
In the
And then when I started looking around, you know, I found a little bit on Rob Bishop's website, a small
right.
article in the Tribune, some information from the Wilderness Society and kind of patched it all together. So it's,
That's
out there. If you Google the name of the bill is actually called the Hill Creek Cultural Preservation and Energy Development Act. So you get the preservation and the development in there. It was HR 356. If you want to look that up, if you want to Google that. So
good job.
Yeah.
Thorough covering. Good story.
That's right.
Yeah. All right. Let's go to the next one. EJ, what do you have?
So when you think about like states in our country that are pretty big on environmental collaboration and being, you know, pretty forward about climate change, we always think about California and Oregon and
mm-hmm.
those states. So California recently signed a pact with Mexico and their environmental officials. They signed a pact aimed at reducing greenhouse gas emissions for both the California and for Mexico, but mostly for Mexico, through the expansion of the market for carbon credits. So California has a cap and trade system going on with their carbon credits. So basically they're expanding the market to Mexico and working with the Mexican government on reducing their emissions as well as reducing California's emissions.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So any idea as far as what kind of emissions we're talking about? Is this industrial power
well,
plant emissions or
the biggest thing about Mexico
emissions?
So Mexico is the world's 11th largest emitter of greenhouse gases, with most of that in electricity generation.
Okay.
So they're trying to figure out with California like how they're going to cut these emissions with electricity, what renewable sources they're going to put in, what like companies are going to try to diminish this, see what they can do to try to reduce the emissions with electricity and find some other way that isn't as harmful on the environment.
Okay. And in return, they get from California?
Mainly with California, it's, well, the big thing is Mexico is developing. And so a lot of it is going to be working with these corporations in California. So that's going to be helping the government, helping the economy in Mexico, while also, you know, developing Mexico as from into more of a first world country.
Okay. So maybe a technology swap there.
So it's
for
more
emissions
of,
reduction.
Yeah. Being able to work with companies that are doing well in California.
Doing the right thing.
Exactly.
They want to do the right thing.
Exactly.
Okay. Any sense when this gets started? Or
so it was signed. I'm trying to think. I think it was signed yesterday.
Okay.
And, you know, with environmental, with PACs, they don't, it's not like set in stone. Like, this is when this is happening. It's just a PACT. It's not a formal,
A formal schedule and agenda that's there.
Exactly.
Okay.
But it's a partnership that's probably going to be ongoing.
Interesting that it is a state and
a country. A state and a country. Yeah, exactly.
Agreeing to this.
And on top of that, China agreed with California, which is amazing, for their...
What? Stop sending...
No, it was actually just sharing information on the cap and trade system. So it's a big step for China because they haven't done anything like that with the U.S. nation, but...
Okay.
It's just discussions are starting.
They're
going to
send
steps.
Information, exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
So China's trying.
Yeah.
We'll say
they're
that.
They're always trying. They're always trying. They have a lot to try for. Okay, let's take a quick break for another set of underwriters and come back. I got a story about industrial sludge in the state of Virginia.
100 feet from your property line.
Exactly. It's This Green Earth. Stay tuned.
In a city where good information is as valuable as finding hooch on Pioneer Day, Joseph Pop Jenks gets a visit.
What's the matter, Mac?
My Dolores has gone missing. All I found was this note.
Public service announcement. Your skirt ain't coming back from the curling club tonight. Signed, Big Donor.
Will Pop help Lefty find Dolores? Find out during the KPCW Summer Pledge Drive August 18th through 22nd. Who done it? Who donated? Could it be you?
Welcome back to This Green Earth. Chris Cherniak, along with Nell Larson, EJ Elliott. We're going through some news items of the environmental world this past week. I've got one here. A Baltimore-based company wants to spread waste called industrial sludge. I'll explain that in a minute. On more than 16,000 acres of farm fields in seven Virginia counties. Maybe one of them is your county, EJ, where you...
I'm going to have to check that out.
UVA is... but opponents have raised a stink, quote unquote, if Virginia officials are taking a longer look at this. Now, the company is called Sinagro Technologies, and they want to spread this industrial sludge. Now, what is industrial sludge? In this case, it's kind of the waste material that comes from poultry plants, hog farming operations, and a paper and pulp mill. Okay. So, They all generate wastewater. They get treated on site, and like any domestic wastewater treatment plant, like here at East Canyon Creek, a sludge is the result of that. You have to do something with it. In this case, the state of Virginia has been applying domestic wastewater sludge to farm fields or fields or otherwise for years, as the article says. Now they wanted to add to that industrial sludge in the form of poultry processing, hog farms, et cetera. Okay, that's admirable because the alternative is to simply put it in the landfill.
Right, which often involves driving it many, many miles in many, many trucks.
Yeah, and it's actually, if done correctly, this sludge is organic. It's rich in organic. Look, we just got done talking to Jessica Carrs about, you know, they want to turn their domestic waste in the Kenyon village into a compost, a reusable sludge. And so it can be used properly. But here's the interesting thing. In the state of Virginia, you can apply this sludge within 100 feet of a property line and 200 feet from a house. So that's the big issue here. You know, if you had a home and you happen to be adjacent to a farm field, they could apply this sludge within 100 feet, plus or minus, you know, depending on the farmer's accuracy, of your property line or 200 feet from your home. Is that too close? Is that far enough? So the state of Virginia says that's okay.
Well, there are a couple questions there. One is just like the ick factor, I think. Like it probably is going to smell gross.
That's one of the
biggest.
It's
going to look gross for a little while. But then the other question is like, you know, are there environmental or health impacts from this? Like when it's just, you know, your basic sewage sludge, you're probably not as concerned about that, although that does have chemicals and
it can,
you know, can have endocrine disrupting compounds in there and things like that. And then I imagine with paper mill sludge, there are also a number of chemicals involved. So
perhaps
I feel like
some
it's
heavy
kind of
metals.
Like that,
yeah.
Right. That like dual, like, yeah, one, it's just kind of gross.
Yes.
And second, are there?
But there could be biological and chemical issues associated. And it is, so does that distance need to be reconsidered? So it's an interesting story about, you know, an attempt to reuse some of this material. That's admirable. But are we going a little, are we reusing it in the proper way?
Yeah.
Are we getting a little too close to risk areas?
This kind of
200 feet from my home.
Right. This kind of gets back to the story we were just talking about, though, in Kenya with the, like, the issues with the composting outhouses and stuff. You know, people didn't want to use that compost. They're just grossed out by it.
It's just a perception thing.
Yeah.
And at times it's a healthy perception.
Sure.
A healthy pause for concern.
There's a reason that we don't have a natural inclination.
Right. Maybe we need to get Mike Lures in here to talk more about sewage sludge and
I know they've done a lot of research on the, you know, how they can use that and looked at different options. So.
Okay. Yeah.
And run into some barriers.
And some barriers? All right. We'll get in touch with him.
Mike, if you're listening, next week on the show.
Next week, be here at 10 after 9. All right. We've got a couple minutes. Let's, let me do one last, got to do one last underwriter, and we'll come back and wrap up. It's This Green Earth.
Additional funding for programming on KPCW has been provided by Long Reimer Weiniger Bepler, Estate Planning Family Law, lrw-law.com. Park City Nursery. We know what grows. ParkCityNursery.com. The Corporation for Public Broadcasting and listeners like you.
This is Reese DeMille with Republic Services, your local recycling and garbage service provider and a proud sponsor of KPCW. Summit County residents are recycling more and more each year in their residential curbside recycling bin. Please help by putting acceptable recyclables in and keeping glass out. Thank you, Summit County. SummitCountyRecycles.org.
Welcome back to This Green Earth. It's time to wrap up the show. First, I want to thank Jessica Kars again for coming on and sharing with us her experience with Engineers Without Borders, the work she did over in Western Kenya back in June, attempting to dig a water well. And that's amazing. Go down 600 feet and it's dry, like, ouch.
Yeah.
But there's still, it's a village, very appreciative of all the efforts that they do either with water or other infrastructure.
They're headed back next year to install a different kind of water.
It's a yearly effort, and it's a great group, Engineers Without Borders. And I'm gonna go get some Skooma Wiki at the end of the show.
That's right. Just casually drop that into conversation.
Yeah, exactly.
Skooma Wiki or kale.
And then,
but I wanted to mention their website, Engineers Without Borders. It's ewbmsu.com for the chapter that she was a part of at Montana
Perfect.
State University.
And of course, thanks again to Amy Roberts with Park City Medical Center and John Nuffer with Falling Water Landscaping about talking about the medical center's community garden. Great. It's free. It's open to everybody. Go check it out.
Yeah.
Right there in the parking lot
area. Go pick
area.
Some veggies.
All right. Let's also thank our underwriters for whom this show would not be possible. They include Recycle Utah,
Republic Services,
Vail Resorts,
Rocky Mountain Power,
San Francisco Design,
and Berkshire Hathaway Home Services.
Of course, you can always join us on Facebook. Give us your thoughts and ideas for future shows. That's KPCW This Green Earth.
You can also email us your comments and ideas at thisgreenearth@kpcw.org.
Hey, you know what? Next week, I am going to try to get a hold of Mike Lures and talk about some of the wastewater treatment issues there. Of course, the Toledo just had their issues with algae and toxins getting into their water treatment plant and how that was addressed. And do we have that kind of problem out here? Maybe find out from Mike or others. Remember, this is KPCW 91.9 Park City.
Only in Park City, only on KPCW.
All right, thanks again for joining us on This Green Earth every Tuesday at 9 a.m. Stay tuned because NPR News is next.